Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
One of the great controversies in Irish sporting history has dominated the World Service this week. Just who was at fault for the opening French goal in the 2-0 World Cup qualifying defeat in Paris in November 1976? Hey, Murph.
They told us to just leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
It was the
this
third rail of Irish journalism, you know? It's like all these old entities being dragged up again.
Yeah,
but no, without fear or favour on the World Service, that's how we operate.
It started with an email from Paul Hennessy, who dredged up an old interview with Johnny Giles from McGill magazine in 1977. Giles was explaining his photographic football memory and how he remembers mistakes from matches going back years when the intrepid young interviewer...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep, that guy, retorted with... Like the one you made in the World Cup qualifying match against France in Paris when you were dispossessed and handed the French a goal. Whoa. Giles disputed Vincent Brown's account of that goal, claiming a teammate's pass dropped short and the French pounced before he had a chance to control it properly. But having watched it back on YouTube, we can now exclusively reveal, all these years later, that certainly according to the French commentator, well, let's just say he was pinning this one on Gilesy.
Giles, dépossédé du ballon pour Platini, peut-être le but. Ouais, une faute de Giles et un but réussi par Platini qui n'a pas laissé passer l'occasion. Regardez. Regardez bien.
Sorry, what was that? Who was at fault?
Une faute de Giles.
Il est faute de Giles. Ooh, ouch.
I mean, well, it's French that even me and you can understand.
Yeah,
you know he's really made a point of it, you know.
Clear eye there, yeah. Clearly not a Leeds fan. Sounds like there was something going into that. That French commentator had something... Didn't seem to be a Giles fan. I don't know. There was some sort of enmity there. Sanadian man, perhaps? Did Leeds play Sanadian in any of those matches back in the day? Anyway, there was a high-profile retirement from the football world this week. Gareth Bale's later years at Real Madrid may have been a write-off, but Ken had no doubt about how big a player this man was in his prime.
Gareth Bale is one of the most amazing players I've ever seen. I used to see him a lot when he played for Tottenham. He was just phenomenal, partly because that press box at Tottenham at the old White Hart Lane was very close to the touchline, so I'd often see Bale just galloping past. You know, you can almost hear like the thunder of Bale's hooves as he sped past. And I don't think I've ever seen a player who I was so impressed with in terms of their athletic ability. I've never seen anyone else who quite matched up to Bale in that respect. The way that he would, you know, that move of, you know, his what is Bale's defining move? I mean, players give different things to the game.
Yeah, well, when he kicks a pass to player and runs, well, in one particular case, ran practically into the stand all the way.
In many cases, he used to do that all the time. That's the Bale. Right, that's what I will remember as the Bale, knocking the ball past the player and then curving run off the pitch and back on again ahead of that player. I mean, he did it famously for Madrid in the cup final in 2014, I think. But he used to do that for Tottenham. He did that I've seen him do that. And you're just, I mean, it's amazing. It's mind-blowing to see that. And then the shots, oh my God. Like, you know, the goals that he would just smash in from... insane distances. The way he was able to just put the ball in the top corner from anywhere within 30 yards at like
have
incredible
people forgotten
power.
A lot of that though?
Well, I mean, that's the nature of life.
Yeah. I'm sorry, just to say, it's not like, you know, he was at Tottenham and then he moved to Real Madrid and was a busted flush, which I think people sort of think now. You know, he had injury problems from the start. It was never a clear run in Madrid, and obviously the last few years have been a complete nightmare before he went off to the MLS. But he, like I said, he scored more than 100 goals for them. And forgetting about just numbers, okay, we keep saying this, it's not just about numbers. He did score that goal in the Champions League final against Atletico, effectively the winner, the one that put them 2-1 up. Yep. That was the Decima final, right? That's an historic moment, and yet Ronaldo scored the final penalty and took a shirt off and all that kind of stuff.
Di Maria was the man of the match. Di Maria was the one who crossed him the ball for the goal, and that was, you know, that was another. I was at that game as well on the 2014, and it was another one where Bale's physicality won the match for Real Madrid because against a team that was really, I mean, the way that it had gone as well, because it was a late equaliser by Ramos in injury time, to where Atletico had been 1-0 up and thinking they were going to win, so obviously they're kind of broken a little bit, but then they just couldn't handle Bale's power. You know, the way that he got onto that. I mean, if you remember the header, he was galloping from sort of deep, and Di Maria got down there, and he got there and kind of Trevor Francis it almost into the top corner. But also then in 2018, you know, where he came off the bench
and scored
that crazy goal, and then another, three, you know, just kicked the ball through Karius effectively.
That shouldn't even count, really.
No, but you know, that game sort of summed up maybe the problem with his career at Real Madrid, because he had already fallen out with him at that stage. Zidane already had told him that he wanted him to go. When he came after the game was the weirdest. I mean, I've spoken about this before, but it was just so weird. It was also Ronaldo's last game for Madrid, and the way that Bale and Ronaldo both after this, what should be a great moment of celebration, all they were doing was angrily complaining about their situations. You know, Ronaldo's like, well, you know, maybe I'm not appreciated enough around here, I might have to go. And you're like, could you not be happy for like 5 minutes? You know, we literally just won the Champions League, and you're already kind of talking, you're already in the kind of where am I going now, and I'm not getting enough respect.
Bale was the same.
There was no joy in, I mean, I'm sure he was delighted the moment he saw the bicycle kick fly in, but like, partly because it was like, yeah, like, you know, fuck you, Zidane, you know, leave me on the bench. You know, it was kind of a fuck you to Zidane and the Real Madrid fans. It was like, yeah, I've just won you another Champions League, you know, and that's kind of the story of his later career with Madrid, because obviously Bale was like, well, these guys are trying to throw me out, but like, I don't have to go and I feel disrespected. He just stubbornly dug in his heels, which he was entitled to do. He was like, well, you're not going to get rid of me that easy. I'm sorry. You're going to pay me every penny that you owe me. And there's something to admire in that, but also he lost the last years of his career because of that stance that he took, because of his sort of pride and refusal to be just manipulated or pushed around by Real Madrid. He ended up kind of losing those final seasons, and also becoming kind of a hate figure at Madrid, because it wasn't just, I mean, even if fans, there were some fans who would appreciate the kind of massive sort of explosive moments that he had given to the team. But most of them also are just listening to the radio every day about how Bale is just a leech, like a giant leech. And then the whole Wales Gulf Madrid. But we haven't even mentioned Wales yet. And this is the thing about Bale. Wales is his real career. I know that he won the 5 Champions Leagues with Madrid, and, or, you know, was at Madrid when they won 5 Champions Leagues and was important in some of them and not so important in others, but 5. He's got 5. It's a crazy, it's an insane achievement, you know, but his real career was with Wales, because that was what meant most to him. Obviously it meant most to him, and he didn't win anything with Wales, but that doesn't matter, because he was, for Wales, the greatest superhero anyone had ever seen, a player beyond the imagination of anyone. When they, you know, when they started going to Wales games, that one day they would have like literally a cartoon character footballer who just did the maddest things on the field, and obviously carried them to, I mean, Jesus, when I think about it, I wasn't at the semi-final when they lost, and it was Ronaldo who scored the goal for Portugal. But I was there for the quarterfinal when they beat Belgium in like what was just a peak moment. You know, it's kind of people are like, well, you know, I mean, I don't know if anyone goes, well, you didn't win the Euros, did you? But like to experience a moment like that, to live a match like that, Wales, that's what it's all about. Like, that's really what it's all about.
Getting Wales to a semi-final is the equivalent of winning a tournament. I say that respectfully, you know, as like, it would be the same with us. Mm. You know, if somebody came along like that and got us to a semi-final of a European Championships, I don't think you could be saying, oh, they didn't go on and win.
And to destroy Belgium the way that they did. I mean, that was... I mean, Bale, I don't think he scored in that game, did he? It was Vokes. Vokes scored the third. Robson Kennedy scored a very memorable goal.
Oh, yeah, the turn and shot, yeah.
And I can't remember, Ashley Williams, maybe? And the Belgium had taken the lead. Nainggolan, another player whose career was to fade out in a different way from Bale's. So he was he thrown out of his club for vaping or something recently?
Ashley Williams
loves a bit of vaping.
You got it right. Ashley Williams opened the scoring. Hal Robson Kanu.
Yeah, that was the famous goal.
Opened the scoring. He equalised, and then Robson Kanu and Sam Vokes.
Vokes, the vinegar strokes at the end. So. I mean, okay, that was, I mean, he'd already scored for England, and they ended up losing that. Sorry, not for England, against England, obviously, the one where Joe Hart spilled it into the corner, although England ended up winning that group game. But, you know, this is what it's all about. And then, like, all of those qualifiers that Wales, I mean, Wales had to qualify for these tournaments, and the reason that they qualified was Bale, like an unanswerable weapon that, you know, just took them past so many teams. So, that's really what his career was about. And obviously, it was summed up in that banner that annoyed Madrid so much, the Wales Golf Madrid thing. But that's kind of just how he saw it. And now, obviously, the World Cup finished and it didn't really happen for Wales. Although, remember that even in that, Bale was about to score from the halfway line. And he was pulled down by, remember, which was it the, it wasn't the Iran, was it the USA game? And there were, you know, the goalkeeper's out of position, and Bale was about to pull the trigger, and someone just pulled him down. And because it was so far from goal, it wasn't a red card, but it should have been. You know, imagine that goes in, things could have been different. Although Bale at this point had kind of, the injuries had got him basically. All he could do was kick the ball really hard.
His last career was a bit. Was more his last major tournament was more than underwhelming, but I think, like you're saying, he had done his bit for Wales by that point. You know, to be fair.
Yeah, so if you're Welsh, I mean, do you think any Welsh person considers that Gareth Bale maybe wasn't a great player? I mean, obviously at Madrid, everyone will be like, well, that guy, you know, he went off the rails, you know, because he so clearly lost his interest, his passion for what he was doing. It's really visible, you know, when that happens. I'm sticking around getting paid like 30 million a year or whatever. Again, he was totally entitled. You know, he didn't write the contract that Real Madrid awarded him. You know what I mean? They gave it to him and then decided they made a mistake. Well, sorry, you know, you bought it, you own it. It's like you said earlier, I mean, these things get forgotten. I mean, footballers just get forgotten immediately because there's always just more. It's just every week there's more. And everyone is excited about the present moment. So Bale is like any other player in that way, except if you're Welsh, in which case he is immortal.
Immortal, Murph. Praise does not get any higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he laid it out pretty well. He made a pretty compelling argument for Gareth Bale as an immortal.
I mean, a compelling case for somebody as an immortal. I mean, do you believe in immortality? These are deeper questions that I didn't intend to be getting into. In
the memory and the legacy is, you know, we're not talking about, you know, like corporeal immortality.
No, football immortality.
Eventually, Gareth Bale will die. Mm. He will die on. Mm. He will go the way of all flesh. But those memories, well, they may last forever. Or at least as long as YouTube is available.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
It's playoff time in the NFL this month, which means loads of US Murph over the next few weeks. The story of the season so far has undoubtedly been the recovery of the Buffalo Bills player Damar Hamlin from the cardiac arrest he suffered on the field last week.
And just becoming just this runaway train story of 2023, meshing right when the Buffalo Bills launched their run, a quite likely chance of a Super Bowl playing out against this Damar Hamlin story. Guys, the t-shirts that are for sale that his team put together, that I think Owen and I talked about this last week, I think, or the days run together, but that when he came to, the first thing that he wrote on a note, this is before he could speak, was, "Did we win?" And that was like, that line now has become, you know, almost an instant classic in U.S. sports, you know, "Did we win?" Was that the first thing he wrote? And then, of course, the almost over-the-top response from the doctors, those cinematic, they wrote down on the notepad, "Yes, Damar, you won at the game of life." And like, there wasn't a dry eye coast to coast, right? Or in the, around the world, really. I mean, who were following this story in Ireland, too. But now they actually have shirts that say, "Did we win?" with the image of Damar making the sign of the heart with his hands, which is what he made to the Buffalo Bills when he was zoomed in to the team meeting before their season finale against the New England Patriots. Now, he still wasn't really talking that much, although now apparently, as we speak right now, he's speaking better and better. But at the time, he mustered out a "Love you, boys." And people are just like, I mean, the movie scenes are just coming one after another, whether it's, you know, "Did we win" on a notepad, or making the heart and saying "Love you, boys" to the team right up to kickoff against the New England Patriots. And I'm sure most people know by now, but we can't even believe that the opening kickoff in a stadium charged with emotion and cheers and three jerseys and three signs for his number, his jersey number, that the opening kickoff gets taken back for a touchdown by Nyheim Hines. And we had Jim Nantz on our show today, and he said, as Hines kind of ran down the 30, the 20, he said the only thing he could say is, "This is storybook. This is for Damar," is what he said. And now an iconic call. And, you know, so everything's set up. Woe be the team that has to play the Buffalo Bills in January. The Miami Dolphins draw that assignment. Not only is it in Buffalo, where it should be gnarly January weather, but you're going up against what appears to be supernatural forces.
Right. And so you were speaking to Jim Nantz, because I actually read a piece with Jim Nantz on The Athletic just earlier today, talking about just how difficult it was to try and get the tone right. As the he was thinking about it all week, obviously, and while Hamlin's condition was, you know, up in the air, he was obviously dealing with a lot of stuff in his own head about, you know, how do you put football in, you know, in perspective when this guy's gravely ill. And then all of a sudden his condition improves, and then he's live tweeting the game, and then that opening play happens. I mean, I can't think of a more electrifying NFL moment in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, it, like, I was tuned in 15 minutes before the game kicked off because I knew it was going to be unbelievably charged atmosphere, unbelievably emotional. And then for that to happen, it was just absolutely, it was a crazy, crazy thing to watch live, even over here.
And it happened again. He returned a second one for a touchdown. And then you heard after, which is insane. Like, I mean, you know, the Irish, you guys have such great NFL fans who listen. They know that returning a kickoff for a touchdown is, it's not, you know, it's not unheard of, but it's unusual. It only happens a handful of times a year. But for it to happen twice in one game, and for it to happen, you know, in the Damar Hamlin game, you know, because actually the other subplot of the story was that the New England Patriots weren't messing around. They actually played one of their best games of the year and sort of made it a very competitive game. But like we said, ultimately you just knew somehow, some way that the Bills were going to win the game. A, they're a better team, but B, they were playing for something larger than themselves. And now Josh Allen, you know, the great quarterback of the Bills, he's been a real spokesperson throughout this whole thing. And that, you know, you start to, you know, people at times like this, this happens in life in general. I know this happens to people when you suffer something, a loss or some sort of grief, people coping with stress or traumatic events. Sometimes you quote unquote look for signs. Now, I don't know. This is just sort of a human coping mechanism, you know. I don't know if you truly believe in these things. Some people do. Some people just talk about it because it's interesting, or some people want to believe in something, you know, because it helps them. But that they said it was 3 years and 3 months since the last time a Bill had taken a kick for a touchdown. And Josh Allen, when he was told that in the postgame, because the number three for DeMar Hamlin is not, he choked up again, all over again. This is a young man, young 26-year-old man, you know, doesn't walk around crying all the time, but he choked up again saying he thinks there's just something going on. And again, like, you know, there's coincidences in the world, and I'm not saying that supernatural forces exist, but as
there is a Jim Carrey movie about that exact topic, right? The number 23.
Oh yeah, yeah. But like, it's just kind of showing up in strange places and all that. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. Anyway, again, I think that's kind of just a human coping mechanism. I'm not necessarily a true believer in all these supernatural forces, but I do believe that when people play for something larger than themselves, that special things can happen, for sure. I definitely believe that. And that's what happens in sports sometimes, you know, that, you know, but then, you know, sometimes it comes down to the X's and O's, guys. And, you know, like, can the Buffalo Bills be a better football team? Then I think there's little doubt that in a matchup against the Miami Dolphins, now the Dolphins are really good, but they have a serious quarterback problem. Tua Tagovailoa is battling major concussion issues. As of now, we don't know if he's playing Sunday. I would lean towards thinking he's not playing Sunday, because he's had really a tough time with concussions.
It seems crazy that he would, Brian. He's had a number of them this season.
Yeah, but
most of what I read is just, let's all do the sensible thing here, err on the side of caution, and just give the guy a break from having his head.
It really seems, if you watched his last game when he was playing the fourth quarter, and he threw, three interceptions, at least two, maybe three interceptions in the fourth quarter alone. And it turned out he was playing, you know, with a recurrent concussion. It was like, it made sense because he looked terrible. And now you find out he shouldn't even be out there. So I can't imagine that just 2 weeks later he'd be ready to go. But again, you know, it comes down to football at a certain point. But the Buffalo Bills are in great position to do that. Jim Nance was to win, I mean, and move on to what is an anticipated AFC championship game, which, guys, would be at, if they're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, would be at a neutral site. That is the really, really unusual thing that came out of this whole thing was, you know, how do you solve the fact that because the Bills-Bengals game was postponed because of DeMar Hamlin essentially dying on the field, then getting resuscitated back to life, they couldn't keep playing that game, obviously. And so what do you do? Because they played an uneven number of games. So who has the better record? Who gets home field? Because had the Bills won that game, they would be the number one seed. But they didn't get to play that game. So they have one fewer win than the Chiefs. So the compromise that was reached was that if the Chiefs play the Bills, the Chiefs will get the one seed because they had one more win, but the game will not be in Kansas City, which is a huge deal because Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City is a major home field advantage. Although the Chiefs have lost a couple championship games there, believe it or not. Tom Brady got them there. But they will play at a neutral site. Now, Jim Nance said to us, he said, because we were talking about the movie, you know, Did We Win? Love You Boys. Kickoff return for a touchdown. And he said, the movie's not done. He said, AFC Championship, the team always has a representative hand the trophy to the owner. And he said he's already envisioned in his mind DeMar Hamlin making his first, you know, appearance with the team to hand them the championship trophy. You know, that's out there, guys. That's a very real possibility. The movie is being filmed as we speak. We're in production.
Yeah, we were setting our ambitions way too low on, because we were talking beforehand about how the America's Game documentary was just going to be like way too much. It was going to be off the charts. But of course, Hollywood are going to get their goal before even America's Game is out, I'd say. Yeah, at this rate of going.
Can I ask about Nance, just because you've mentioned him a couple of times there, was it a very unique experience for him,
yes,
a broadcaster as experienced as he is in numerous sports over the years?
Well, Jim's a very emotional guy. He's a really good friend of ours. He's like one of our, we have a really good relationship with him. So he comes on a lot, and he speaks very candidly with us a lot, and he's a very emotional guy. I mean, if you know that about him, some people who, some of his critics would say he's too emotional, too some would say sappy or something, but I love, you know, he's knowing him as well as I do. None of it's phony. He's just one of these guys. He's sort of like, and I say this out of love and respect, if he listens to this or hears this, but he's sort of like Mr. Rogers, the old PBS character in America, you know, won't you be my neighbor? You know, like, and Mr. Rogers, if you saw any of those movies, like the documentary on him or the Tom Hanks movie, like it was all real with Fred Rogers. I mean, he was like, I don't know how if he resonated over in Ireland, but he was the children's host in America in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, who was maybe like the nicest guy in the history of the world, who would run his little television show for children. And he just, everything about him was just insanely sweet and upbeat and optimistic and loving. And that's kind of Nance, believe it or not. He's kind of like Mr. Rogers. And so he was very emotional about the game. And he said that given everything, you know, given that it was all unfolding in their eyes and they didn't know how DeMar's case was day to day. And then how, as each day approached, some more good news came. And then when he zoomed in on the team and said, love you, boys, and made the heart with his hands that they're now selling on the shirt. And oh, by the way, if you buy the shirt, which I did, by the way, the money goes to the University of Cincinnati Trauma Center, to the people who saved his life. So, I mean, it's like it just continues, right? It's amazing. So, he said that he had never been in an environment as emotionally charged as that. Now, this is a guy, I'm trying to think, I think he did he do the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl, that 9/11 Super Bowl was very emotional. Your favorite band and mine, U2, mm-hmm.
Certainly yeah. Yours.
I know the new generation, you know, has turned their back on U2 and all that, but guys, their Super Bowl halftime show on 9/11 year, that couple months, was one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic Super Bowl halftime ever. If you remember, they played Where the Streets Have No Name and rolled all the names of every victim on that screen. Yeah. And it was, and then Bono had the US flag inside his leather jacket. Remember that? And I mean, that was wow. That was for America, that was still extremely wounded and raw. That was pretty special. I think Nance did that game, CBS. I might be wrong on that, though. So I'm thinking that's the only other thing that would sort of compare in terms of an external emotion at play, other than the game, you know, like, because games can be really dramatic. But I'm talking about something outside of a game coming into play. I mean, I'm not, you know, so he just said that it was for him, given the given everything. And also, guys, you know what plays a role in all this is the city of Buffalo. If this was in Dallas or even San Francisco, or it wouldn't be the same. L.A., New York, it wouldn't be the same. There's certain cities in the NFL that are different and that make kind of the NFL great. Obviously, Green Bay comes to mind. Such an unusual place to have an NFL franchise in such a small town. And that's what kind of is so great about the NFL is that their revenue sharing system allows the Green Bay Packers to have as much money as the New York Giants, you know? And so that's what the NFL's figured out, the money. So you have teams in Green Bay, but I would say Green Bay, Buffalo, maybe Pittsburgh I'd throw on there, but it's a little bigger city. Buffalo being the city that this is happening in plays a role. They are amazing fans. I would pay them the highest compliment by saying that they remind me of great Irish sports fans, because I think you guys are among the best sports fans that I've seen. When you guys go on the international stage, you guys bring it. The Irish fans tend to really bring it, make their presence felt.
And tell everyone how we're doing. Right. We've become a little bit too self-aware years. But I just to add to your Buffalo point, they've obviously, and something we didn't touch on last week, I don't think, they've obviously had this horrific winter there as well. They've had these storms. A lot of people have lost their lives and their properties and
guys,
their livelihoods and all that.
If you want to keep talking about that sociological stuff, I mean, they had the horrible grocery store shooting in May. Remember that? The mass shooting there. Yeah. That has been mentioned by more than one Buffalo commenter, that the city of Buffalo is hurting, you know? It was hurting from that, and it was hurting from the blizzard, and now they get this. So that it's there is pretty amazing. That's maybe the only regret, that we wouldn't get an AFC championship in Buffalo, but I guarantee you if they're – whatever neutral site it is, and they would have to win two games to get there, but they would host two games, and I would like their chances because they're a very good team – whatever neutral site they play at, and I don't think it's been picked yet, I think Indianapolis said no because they had like a youth volleyball tournament or something. And Detroit said no because they had like some turf change. For some reason, I'm thinking Atlanta. It's a good East Coast indoor stadium that I got to imagine they're going to play it indoors. But anyway, whatever neutral site they pick, Buffalo fans will be there in force. They call them the Bills Mafia. They're kind of famous for being really aggressive and sort of quasi-violent tailgaters who famously their signature move is to jump off of a truck or a car onto a folding table and smash the table in two. It's a little WWE, you know, it's a little like, and so, but that's their identity and they all go crazy and they're cold and they're freezing. And so for this to happen to this fan base has definitely played a role in the emotion because they are more connected to their team than the average city.
Sounds like the Buffalo Bills fans are the kind of people I like to think about. I like to admire in theory more than I might have actually met these people.
I'd like to watch these guys on TV. That's fine.
I think you guys would actually love them. I got to say, Western New York, I mean, that's some good people, salt of the earth. It's almost Midwestern in a way. You know, they combine sort of a little bit of New York insanity with Midwestern wholesomeness. And thus, not to mention, guys, that as a franchise, they have this sort of tragic history of making four straight Super Bowls and losing them all. And, you know, that, if anything, that's made them so sympathetic because those were amazing Bills teams, those Jim Kelly Buffalo Bills teams. And we've talked about, I think, in the past about that great 30 for 30 called Four Falls in Buffalo. And it's about the four straight Super Bowl losses. But that team, the Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith, great players, amazing players. And the wonderful coach, Marv Levy, who's almost like one of the more like sort of beloved American pro sports coaches. Just this wonderful old, almost like a John Wooden figure, like would read literature and poetry and very non-NFL type of guy. And they just couldn't win one. And so they've never won a Super Bowl. So imagine this being their first ever, you know, that would just.
What do you reckon, Murph, about the Bills? Are they going to go all the way?
They look pretty good. But I'll tell you, Josh Allen is a really, really, really electrifying football player. He'd want to stop throwing all those interceptions, though.
But he's too busy, like as I said there, like Jim Carrey, seeing these numbers, these patterns everywhere as he's going. In his case, the number three, he's just seeing it everywhere. So it's probably confusing him slightly.
Rather than looking at the numbers, look at the colour of the jersey of the person he's throwing the ball at. And just make sure that when he looks down at his own jersey, the person he's throwing to is wearing the same colour as him. That's a big thing for me, Owen. He's throwing a lot of interceptions. He is a seriously, seriously good quarterback. If I was a Buffalo Bills fan, I'd be like, if we could just tighten up that interception number, just tighten it up a little on. That's what I'd be all about.
SecondCaptains.com, £5 a month plus VAT to hear all our podcasts this week in full. And of course, the Second Captains Pod is part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.